Up, and now we are thrilled to be welcoming Georgia Hunter. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Georgia is the debut author of We Were the Lucky Ones. What a beautiful book.
Thank you.
So I know that this was a very, very long road for you, around 10 years of research and writing, and it shows.
Thanks. Yeah, I set off for my first interview in 2008, my little digital voice recorder and my empty notebook, to Paris and then on to Brazil and across
now,
the states.
Yeah. From what we understand is you were around the age of 15 when you realized that you came from a family of Holocaust survivors.
I did, yeah. I had no idea growing up, and I was close with my grandparents. So this is my maternal grandfather. And the book, I should just mention, tracks him and his siblings and his parents, who are a family of Polish Jews, at the start of the Second World War, as they scatter kind of on this twofold mission, one to survive and two to reunite. And my grandfather, we lived a mile apart. I saw my grandparents all the time, but it was just a piece of his past that I think he chose to put behind him.
But you knew that they were European or of European descent.
Nope, he changed his name. I knew him as Eddie Kortz, not as Addie Kirk, who you meet in chapter one. I never detected a Polish accent.
That his name was actually Adolf.
It was,
right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curious why he didn't use that.
Yeah.
I never heard an accent. I was an only child. He was my only living grandfather. He married an American my grandmother was from the Presbyterian South.
That'll really throw you off.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, he was pretty sick by the time I was about 12. He had Parkinson's, so I don't know if you remember, and you guys have kids that age. You're pretty self-centered at that point, and you're not really thinking about your
ancestry. Oh, not my kids. Now, my kids are really worried on a global scale about what's happening.
They want to hang out with their grandparents.
So, at 15, my grandfather had just passed away, and my high school English teacher assigned our class what he called an iSearch project and said, go interview a relative and find out something about your ancestral past. And so I sat down with my grandmother, and it was then that I learned that, yeah, my grandfather wasn't American through and through, as I had thought. He had become an American, but that he was
Polish.
How did
that affect you? Did you feel like you were just...
Yeah,
it was shocking.
I mean, at that age, did the Holocaust have an impact on you?
Certainly,
or was it
just
something out in the
distance? Learned
about
it in school, but it didn't feel as real as when, being told that, I'm from a family of Holocaust survivors. It was shocking, and it mostly left me with questions. And unfortunately,
clearly,
my grandmother wasn't able to answer too many. And my grandfather's story was kind of unique within the family because he was the only sibling living in Paris, living in France at the start of the war. So he managed over a year to get out. But then he lost complete contact with the rest of this huge family in Poland. So for the duration of the war, he had no idea if they were dead or alive, if he'd see them again. And so when I asked about I knew bits and pieces of my grandfather's story after that interview, but I did not know my grandmother. When I asked her about the greater family, the siblings and parents, she said, they were like your grandfather. I met them after the war, but like your grandfather, they didn't want to talk about it. So hence the 9 years of research to uncover this story.
And just for our listeners to know, Georgia is very young, so she's aged well during these 9 years of research.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the actual research that you did. I know that by reading this, it's incredible the detail of historical specificity.
Context,
I mean, it's real, but at the same time, it's a fictional account.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you decided to do that as a writer.
Yeah, I thought long and hard about penning it as nonfiction, only because I had 9 years of research, and every storyline that you read in the book is based on truth. So who was where and when, and my research started with just years of oral history, so collecting interviews from relatives. There was one survivor who is, you'll meet in the book, Felicia, who was a year old at the start of the war. She's still around, so I was able to interview her. I had access to 3 Shoah interviews, which are Steven Spielberg's foundation, the Shoah Foundation, where he put survivors in front of video cameras. So I got these VHS tapes with 3 firsthand accounts.
No kidding.
I got
of my relatives.
Three relatives who had
That's
passed
amazing.
Away. So I had their first, because that was
That's
like gold.
That's just amazing.
That's
it was
so
like
great.
Gold.
And,
yeah.
And when I was reading Felicia's story of how she had contacted Scurvy in the convent.
Yeah.
Did you feel like when you met her as an adult that she had carried that throughout her life?
The
effect that
the effect,
that had
absolutely.
On her being an ill child being dragged around these countries.
Yeah,
to
all
escape.
She knew for the first 7 years of her life was war, being hunted and being in hiding and pretending to be someone she wasn't. And so
because so many people talk about their Holocaust survivor family members being unable to ever be whole again in certain ways. Did you feel like you encountered that?
She was definitely the... I was the most gentle in my approach to interviewing with her, because everybody else was a first, was a second generation survivor. So my mother's generation, they were much more kind of excited and eager to tell me their stories. Felicia's had to take a much more gentle approach. And she had, I mean, those memories are horrific and dark.
Well, and she didn't know her father until she was 7.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, yeah, it was interesting. But the whole family was so supportive. And I think part of the reason, and actually I should credit Felicia. I was 15, I found out about my grandfather's piece. And at 21, I had just graduated from college. My mom hosted a family reunion, the Kirk family side, at our house in Massachusetts. And all of her first cousins came. There were 10 in all. And then with spouses and children, we were about 32. I'd met people I'd never met before, relatives. There were 4 languages. People came in from Brazil and France and Israel. So it was pure chaos, pure fun. And
inspirational, I'm sure.
Totally inspirational. And I spent most of the time hanging out with my generation, and I was kind of like at the older end of my cousins. But one night I wandered outside where my mom's generation was sitting, to the back porch where they were chatting and telling stories, and just kind of listened. It was challenging because there were 4 languages being spoken at once. But that was when I started to hear little pieces of this greater story, a cousin born in Siberia, but he didn't know when exactly or why, and another one whose parents had a secret wedding in a blacked-out house in Lvov, an escape from the ghetto. And I started kind of, I just kind of held my breath thinking, who are you people?
See, this is why parents should let kids wander in and eavesdrop at cocktail parties.
It was my eavesdropping. Yeah. And at the end of the night, Felicia, who was kind of quiet throughout the night, leaned in and said, you know, it's really almost a miracle that we're all here, and we kind of shouldn't be, but we were the lucky ones. And obviously that stuck.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's sort of a double-edged sword when you say that, because of what they endured.
Yeah,
but
I think compared that's part of why they didn't others, talk about it. You, sure. don't, you don't tout the fact that you're a whole family of Holocaust survivors. You don't, like we were talking about earlier, you can't really relate to it, and it's not something you want to shout to the world either. So
now, Lloyd, I'm sure you've come in contact with some Holocaust survivor families. The families and the grandchildren and the generations that go on are impacted negatively by.
Sure. Yeah. There's first of all, there's a lot of bitterness. Families lost everything they had. So even if they come to America, they were very successful in business. Now they're starting over, and it's very hard to transition. They're foreigners and they're Jews. I mean, there'd be a lot of problems. So there is. Yeah. There's a family in Rye that I know that where the uncle who was a survivor, he wrote the history of his family, but never wanted to publish it. He just wrote it for himself and mm-hmm. his family. So there are probably many, many stories out there that haven't been told.
That haven't emerged.
That
this is such
world can read it. It's very
this
nice
is a gift for everyone,
yeah.
What you've done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I don't know if you're talking about this when you're going out on book tours, but are you impacted at all by the current immigration bans? Do you feel like you've told this beautiful story and there are people that I have spoken to who said, oh boy, we may be reliving something we don't want to relive.
Yeah, I never thought that this book would feel so timely in that way.
It does.
And it's very, it's scary. So I do think about it a lot. And to me, I try to find a positive way to think about it. And one of the ways that I do that is that throughout my family story, there were dozens of people who helped strangers, complete strangers, who stepped up, put their lives at risk at times, whether it was
a feature film out right now with Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, if you're listening, Jessica.
Who helped, she didn't, but I guess the person she's portraying,
yeah.
Saving hundreds of children's lives.
Would you want this to become a film?
I have a film agent, and there's talk about it. I might be. I don't know. There's so many characters. It would be a real ensemble piece because it's every chapter is told from a different perspective.
Oh, they,
different
what they did, Anna Karenina, they handled
it. Yeah,
they
can
handle it.
Maybe a series. I don't know.
There you go.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I try to think about how I personally could help. You know, I think it's so easy to feel a little bit distanced from it, but then you realize, wow, this actually does feel familiar with the whole refugee crisis. And so I draw inspiration from those people who stepped up to help my family, and whether they were keeping relative in hiding or taking little Felicia into a convent and bleaching her hair blonde and letting her pass as a little Catholic child. And I think, well, what are some ways, whether it's signing a petition or reaching out to a politician or welcoming a family of Syrians into our community, that I can try to help.
Right.
Make
so
a difference.
That's kind of the tricky part, right? Once you've opened this door, because once you made that choice 10 years ago, you sort of, this is the path you took, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a question about your book tour. How's it going and where have you been? Any unusual stories you can tell us
it's
from the book tour?
Great. It's been so cool. You mentioned Hamilton. My book launch event was in the city at a Barnes & Noble Upper West Side. And I got to sit with my good pal, Tommy Kail, who happens to be the director of Hamilton.
No way.
He went to camp with my husband. I've probably known him for 20 years.
Amazing.
So he offered and we sat and had this conversation.
Maybe he's going to Broadway.
I know, right? Musical?
Right, yeah.
There's
never
a huge
know.
Musical aspect to this.
Well, especially because your grandfather was a composer.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You see the cover
is
this
stuff.
Is actually Chopin's handwritten notes on the cover. Yeah, there's music is a huge theme throughout. But so that was a thrill. And
that
then I went from
amazing.
There to RJ Julia in Madison, which was like the opposite vibe, totally intimate. But I want to mention
it's a very famous bookstore.
I love RJ Julia. I want to mention back to New York. Over 20 of my family members flew in for that event. So you can imagine how moving that was from Brazil, from France, from across the states.
That's
so
cool.
Of the five Kirk siblings in my book, four were represented by
That's
children,
amazing.
Grandchildren, even a great-grandbaby
yes.
at that New York event. So that kicked it off. I was incredibly nervous, but it went well. And then since then, I think I've had 9 stops.
Well, I saw you and Darianne briefly. I got to the tail end of your presentation, and I got to see your mom and dad, which I hadn't met your father before.
My mom's been to all 9 of my events.
That's so sweet.
Nice. When did your research for a class project at 15 turn into realizing that you were writing a book?
Yeah, probably not until my 20s. So 2000, I was 21, just graduated from college. That's when the family reunion
happened.
She
is young.
I'd say that's when the idea was seeded, but it was 2008. It was another 8 years before I got the courage to set off, because I knew it was going to be a beast of a project.
And your husband accompanied you on most of the European research,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we did the last
How
two
fun.
Summers. It was amazing. And then my son, who was 4 at the time, accompanied us last summer in Italy. We did the last leg of the family exodus down the Adriatic coast.
Wow.
And made a couple stops.
Was there anything that was really frightening that you experienced when you were doing the enhanced research?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had a very dark image of kind of Poland in general. Just it's so interesting. Obviously, we have such perspective now that the family didn't have. And I really wanted to write the book through the eyes of these family members who were young at the time, you know, 20s, early 30s. I wanted readers to sort of step into their shoes and make this feel relevant. So hence part of my decision to fictionalize it, because I had the black and white who was where when, but I didn't have the, what were they
the
thinking
feel.
And feeling?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I decided to make it fiction for that reason. But I had this dark image, and I had this, you know, very distinct, I had statistics in my mind. The town where my family came from, called Rodham, had 30,000 Jews before the war. After the war, fewer than 300 had survived. So just
it's
knowing
just amazing.
That
I'm just
in,
hearing that. I read that number. I'm like, it's not real.
Just knowing
and
that.
And it is real, but it just doesn't feel like it could be.
But then I get there, and I'm with my husband, and we arrive in Rodham, and I bust, you know, out of the car, rental car, and run to the old address. And the town is beautiful, and it's quaint, and it's cobblestone streets, and it's got these wrought iron balconies and poppy flowers everywhere. So it was two ways I was struck. One, by I understood why my great-grandparents would choose to raise a family there. I could see what life was like before.
Right.
And then when we visited the empty square where the synagogue once stood, or the cemetery, which had been the Jewish cemetery outside of town, which had once had thousands of tombstones, but during the war, those tombstones were ripped up to create airstrip outside of town. Things like that were incredibly chilling mm-hmm. and haunting. So I left with this like kind of parallel experience, which was very moving. But some of those discoveries
were really hard. Do the townspeople still embrace the tragedy?
That town in particular, they're actually hosting on the 75th anniversary of the liquidation of the Rodham Ghetto. They're going to have this retracing throughout the city where they retrace the steps that were taken by those Jews that were confined to the ghetto. So they are making a big effort in that particular town. I don't necessarily know if that's the case throughout Poland. But
you know, I don't think that people really have followed up or when they think about the Holocaust and then they think about it. It ending and the ghettos being emptied out and Auschwitz and every other place. But I don't think that then, and you speak to this fact of then the Jews still being persecuted by other townspeople or by the government or by whomever. And that's another story that I think hasn't necessarily been told.
Yeah. You mean even after the fact?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And that's part of the reason they left. They never felt like they could go back. And that's part of the reason why none of the family went back. And I was so nervous to go back.
Right.
I'm so glad
it's
that
it's part
I did.
Of the story of the creation of the State of Israel.
Thank you, Lloyd.
This was the emigration and the exodus out of Eastern Europe. Absolutely.
All right, so Lloyd just gave you your next book.
There you go.
Yeah. Thanks. All right, Georgia Hunter, thank you so much. And thank how you. Can people find your book?
Amazon, wewerethelucky1s.com or georgiahunterauthor.com. You can buy it on my site or indie stores.
Is it in some
Amazon.
Local bookstores in Fairfield
yeah,
or Worcester?
Yeah, Barrett and Norroton Heights, Norroton Barrett Heights, Bookstore. Yeah.